welcome to 216, a Link to the Past Randomizer podcast. I am your host, Beer Agent. Here we are for season number two, kicking it off with a big show. We got Wallkicks on the show today. Good friends with Wallkicks, huge runner in the community, one of the best cross keys runners in the game. And we have a really fun conversation that I'm excited for everyone to hear. Coming off of season one, I still can't believe we went through an entire season. You know, the podcast continues to grow, and I'm just so thankful that everyone has been responding so positively to the show. It's been a lot of fun. The conversations that are going on in the Discord just warm my heart. I never thought of the show as being like a self-help show. I ask the tilt question to every guest on the show, and that kind of deals with kind of like the heart of the issue of being stressed out or worrying too much about wins and those kind of things. And the mental health struggle that can come with playing this game. And mental health is like super important to me, as I've struggled with depression and being healthy mentally. It took me, you know, almost 40 years to even begin to discover how to handle it. It's real positive to me that one of the reactions to the show is the talk of mental health in relation to this game, and how we can all relate, and how we can better ourselves, and how we can help each other. And I'm loving it. I'm really loving it. So I'm super excited for season two. The lineup is huge, that we're kicking it off with Wallkicks. I also want to thank everyone for asking questions for the episode that I released last week with Daze Cloud. That was not something I ever planned on doing. It just made me happy. It really made me happy to be able to share my story and the fact that you all were interested in listening to it. I just want to thank everyone for listening to the show and again, sharing it, because more and more listeners are coming and more people are joining the Discord, and it's been great. All right, so enough of the mushy stuff. Let's get into what we're here for, and that's Link to the Past Randomizer. League Season 5 reveal happened, and it was strange. It was strange not being a part of the discussions for the league this year, no longer being an admin, you know, not being a part of the decision-making and what happens. I think the admins did an awesome job with the schedule and the modes they chose and how the playoffs are set up, and really excited to see how it plays out. But I'm going to bitch a little bit about it. Not because I think the admins did a bad job, not at all. I mean, I think they did a great job. But for the first time, I get to complain about the modes that were chosen. So let's go through them. Week one is co-op all dungeons. That's the heart of the league. That's what the league is kicked off with, I think, every season. Yeah. No complaints there. Week two, Invrosia. I think it's the best version of Inverted that's out there. I didn't play the tournament Inverted, the one with starting flute, so I can't speak to that. But Invrosia is really good. It's a good mode if for Inverted, which the league should have. So no complaints there. Week three is Casual Boots, staple of the community. Again, no complaints there. Week four, this replaced co-op spoiler pilot. That was removed this season. Being a part of the admin team in the past, I understand the reason to get rid of spoiler co-op. I wouldn't be surprised to see it come back, but taking a break from it is fine. Very, very divisive mode. People really love it, and then people really hate it. So taking a break is cool. They replace it with what might be my favorite co-op mode, and that's co-op retrance. I find retrance to be super fun, and co-op retrance is even more fun. So I'm a big, big fan of this edition. Last season, it was just in game five of the playoffs, so it wasn't played very much. And now that it's part of the main season, as well as still being the game five playoff mode, I think people are going to find that it's a really fun way of doing co-op entrance. Yeah, I'm very excited about this addition to the main season. I think it was a very smart move to add that. Week six is League Swordless. We'll come back to that. Week six is Pseudo Boots Cross Keys. We'll come back to that. And then week seven is co-op Itemizer with starting boots, which we developed, I want to say, in season four. It might have been season three. I thought this was a good way of playing Itemizer, is to do it with a friend. And then the starting boots thing we threw in there because I thought it was funny. Honestly, dashing around without a sword, like, we didn't give you starting sword originally, so it was literally just starting boots. And so you got to dash around, but you can't dash wildly. Like, you got to really be careful when you're dashing, because, you know, rollers and Lynels and all that stuff is out there. So mostly the boots are there for the audience to laugh at. That's why the boots got added. So it's cool to see them bring that back. So let's get to the league swordless and pseudo boots cross keys. I really don't like Swordless. I don't think it's a fun mode. I don't think it really adds a lot. I know that there's a few fans of Swordless out there, and I know it's a part of the playoffs. And I think it's smart to have crossover between the regular season and the modes available in the playoffs. But in my opinion, this should have been 80 keys or fad keys. The fact that there's no 80 keys, which is one of the most popular modes and pretty much a staple in the community, is a little baffling to me, especially when you replace it with Swordless. Now, having said that, one of the draws of the league is that you get a team together and you have other players that will play modes that you don't like. So while I don't like Swordless, and I'll share my opinions on the pseudo cross keys in a minute, it's not that big of a deal that I don't like it. The problem with Swordless, though, is it's just a mode that most people don't want to play. But if you watched when it was on the ladder, it would struggle to get two runners in. And that just tells me that people aren't really interested in running this mode. 80 keys, Kaz boots, open, cross keys, the staples of the community, I feel like, should be a part of the regular season of the league. And again, I'm not going to be running this when I join the league. I'll make one of my teammates run it. I just don't think it should have been included. I think it should have been an 80 or fad keys. Now, pseudo boots, cross keys. We did the pseudo boots exhibition last season, and holy crap, you would have thought that we were trying to change the entire game. We did four exhibition races, and people kind of lost their minds and had so many opinions on it. And the exhibition really was just to get your hands on it. It was weird that so many people had such strong opinions before even using it. It shouldn't be that surprising, I guess. But, you know, I was trying to save my opinions till I actually played the game with them. And I found that I just didn't really care for pseudo boots all that much. I like to dash. I love to dash. I love having the boots. But it's also, I don't know, there's just something about it that feels a little bit more ROM hacky to me than everything else in the game. And I would have just preferred just do cross keys. I think just doing cross keys would have been fine. It's adding something that is very divisive. People have very strong opinions about pseudo boots. I don't really care one way or another. I'm not the biggest fan of them, but you know, I'll use them or whatever. But it's just so divisive, and it's like creating a division that doesn't need it. That's just my opinion. So I'm not attacking the admins. I'm not saying what they did is dumb. they're really smart. They want the best for the league. They're looking out for the best interest in the league. But now I get to have opinion on what they do as an outsider, and I kind of enjoy it. So that's coming up at the beginning of October. I think registration's the last week of August. I'm really curious about the Invitational this year. I think there's going to be a lot of turnover. I'm not sure if a lot of Invitational teams are returning. I know there's a lot of teams that have broken up and are reforming into new teams. So yeah, I think the Invitational is going to be really interesting, and we'll see how many teams totally register for both the Invitational and the Open, because apparently there's a room for a whole bunch of them. League's coming up, and it's going to be very exciting. Kaz Boots tournament's going on into the brackets. Top 64 single elimination. Single elimination's spicy, as we have, I guess I would call these three upsets. Jettaman over Zelga Dasan. Zelga's out. Windfox over Vortex of Doom. Vortex is out. Kitsune versus Koi. Koi is out. That's three big runners that are immediately eliminated from this tournament. And it's spicy. That's spicy. That's what single elimination will do. So check out that Kaz Boots Discord. Keep up with all the tournament action there. Cross Keys tournament just wrapping up week number 6. I'm currently 4-2. Still alive. Still got 2 weeks to go. I gotta go 2-0. And it's not going to get any easier from here. We'll see if we can pull it out. I've been trying my damnedest to qualify for the top 16 of the ladder invitational, which is entrance this year. It's got the cross keys. It's got retrance, and it's got inverted cross keys. Currently 2 games under 500. I just cannot catch a break there. But I'm going to grind the shit out of it. I've already hit 10 races, well over 10 races. So I'm just going to grind and grind and grind and try to make that top 16. In a hole, but I think I can dig myself out of it. One more thing to announce before we get into the interview. For season 2, we are starting the 216 weekly. We've added a role that's pingable in the Discord for the 216 weekly. And you're probably asking, what is the 216 Weekly? Well, the 216 Weekly is going to be a weekly race on Saturdays at 12 p.m. Eastern that will have a rotating set of modes, and we can vote on them. We can find different ways of doing them. I'll announce them on the show. For this first week, we're going to be doing Fat Keys in honor of the missing 80 keys from the league this season. So we'll be doing a big group race if anyone can join, and I will pick two racers from the race, and we'll restream them on my channel, twitch.tv/fearagent_, and we'll have some fun. So big races have kind of gone away. I know they still occasionally happen with the daily. I know that the open weekly sometimes happens on Sundays. There used to be a Kaz Boots weekly on Saturdays around this time, and that would get like 60 to 80 people back when big races were a thing. I don't know if we can get 60 or 80, but I'd like to get a lot of people joined in this race. So Saturday, 12 p.m. Eastern, that's a little early for this West Coasters. It's 9 a.m., but I feel like it's a good solid time that allows most people from all time zones to enter. And we'll be switching up the modes every week. Again, we're going to do Fad Keys this week. Fad Keys is Faux All Dungeons Key Sanity. So it's 80 keys with the two Castle Tower keys being vanilla, which was a mode that we created for the league in season 4. So if you want to join and you want to get pings for it, we'll put out pings about a half an hour before the race starts. So 11:30 a.m. Eastern in the 216 Discord, which you can find at 216pod.com. And we'll get these races going, these restreams going. We've got the open door policy. So if no one else is there and you want to jump in, just go ahead and jump in. We've also have a new role that you can grab that will get you access to that channel. It's the green room role. So grab that if you want to do some comms as well. Also have a NMG role, as we'll be doing some NMG in 216 as well. I recently did an NMG race or an NMG run with Magnet Hands and was able to get a new PB. I got a 131.57, I think. So we'll be doing some NMG races. 216 Pod Discord is a place to be, doing lots of fun stuff. The 216 Weekly, every Saturday, noon Eastern. This week is Fad Keys. All right, enough yapping. Let's get to the interview. All right, well, Kicks, I'm super excited to have you on the show because you are, if I was to like clarify or give you a classification in the community, it's the good guy. Like you are the guy that is friends with everyone in the community for the most part. It feels like you're like have your fingers in all the different social circles and are just friendly with everyone because you are a good guy. That's kind of the thrust of it. So I'm excited to do this or have this conversation because I feel like I'm in one of those circles and right. You are a good guy. that's the fun part about it.
I do generally try to be a good guy. I think there's a difference between being good and being nice. Like, yes, there are people who are nice who, you know, you talk to them, they're kind to you. They, you know, they speak on friendly terms with you. But then like maybe once you kind of get to know them a little better, you kind of see underneath their initial surface and you see like, oh, they're kind of mean, kind of rude otherwise. There are some people in the community like that. But like I try to at least show who I am at all times. I'm not going to be, you know, you're not going to see if I'm upset, you're going to know I'm upset. If I'm happy, you know, I'm going to be happy.
Yeah.
But I always make sure to treat people with respect, at least until you no longer show me respect. Like if you treat me wrong, I'm going to be mean to you.
Sure.
In respect. And I think that works pretty well. Like you said, you know, I just try to be kind to those around me and show respect. And in return, I usually get some of that respect back. And I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that I really don't, I'm beginning to take more part in like the admin side of some of the rando, but prior to the 80 keys tournament that we run, I really wasn't involved in like having to be the mean person when it comes to like coming up with a decision.
Yeah. And so it allows you to be the good guy. And I think what you said really clarifies it. Like there is such a difference between nice and good. Cause it's like easy almost to be nice.
Yeah.
And then behind everyone's back, you're just an asshole. We don't know anyone like that, but, I mean, to be genuinely, I think the difference is people are drawn to good people. You know what I mean? Like people want to be around people that are good. And and so you are one of those people that's like, oh, I want to hang out with Wall Kicks. I want to watch Wall Kicks stream. I want to watch him play the game or I want to play the game with him because because of that, right? Like there is a cause and reaction. So
I appreciate that. You know, when I stream rando, I'm usually streaming a ladder race or a tournament race. I'm not I don't generally stream just casual playthroughs or casual randos at this point. So like my focus is obviously much more on the race itself because I'm trying to win. I do have that competitive nature in me, despite me sometimes trying to not be competitive. But when I am competitive, usually within like the first hour of the seed, because I still like to have chat open. I still like to talk. I still like to communicate and, you know, enjoy the company that I get with streaming. But the first hour is usually pretty good because usually the seed is going just fine. I don't have any issues with it. Then I'll last locate something and I'll progressively get like quieter and just like more annoyed with the seed as it goes along. But people, to their credit, are still very kind, very supportive. And I'm very appreciative of that. And I try to show my appreciation by, you know, kind of hanging out in other people's streams when I can and talking to them and getting to know them as well.
Sure. Let's take it back. Where did you find ALTTPR? What was your first interaction with the game? And
you know, I couldn't tell you exactly when I started watching rando. I know you asked this of basically everyone, so I kind of started going back and looking through. I have a personal Twitter, not one that is necessarily related to my streaming at all. I don't hide it. So like if people find it, they're free to follow me. Like there are a number of rando runners who follow me and thus know my actual name, because it is just my name. But I went through kind of the pictures that I post on it. I don't really post on it very often. I have a picture from October 2017. Of me with two laptops because I didn't have a desktop at the time. I had my MacBook, which was on a hockey game that I was watching. And then I had my Chromebook, which I had recently bought because my MacBook was starting to show its age and I wanted something a little faster. And so from October 2017, I'm watching a race between Haiku Type and Yuka Bonk. I couldn't tell you anything about what's actually going on in the race, except for the fact that they appear to have all of the same equipment. They have three crystals. They have Eastern, Hera, and Paw Dun. Yuga Bonk is in Swamp. I don't know what Haiku is doing because he has his menu up. So that would see. So October 2017 is definitely when, at least at some point, I was watching.
So were you watching Twitch before, like before you even got into ALTTPR? What were you watching?
So a lot of people don't know this. Wallkicks is not my first Twitch account. Okay. I used to go through. I was under a different name originally called. And this is really bad because no one could pronounce it. It was called Owendon, which is a Japanese-based rhythm game. If you've ever seen Elite Beat Agents, or if you know Osu, it was a DS version of Osu, essentially, which is like a rhythm-based, you tap on circles or whatever. So I was called Owendon, and I remember I was starting to watch the first runner I think I ever followed, and the first runner I ever chatted with was someone called Sweetie T. I don't remember really much about him, but that was the first person I started talking to. And then when it came to speedrunning, I was very much into the Siglemic and at the time Cosmorite scene. So Super Mario 64, Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. I couldn't honestly tell you when I got into Link to the Past rando other than this tweet from October 2017.
But you were familiar with Twitch before getting into rando. You were watching, you said, those streams.
Yes.
And when was this? When did this start, do you think?
Oh, I definitely was watching GDQ around 2013, 2014.
Early days.
Yeah, definitely the early days of Twitch, back when I was working overnights at a television station. I used to be a television producer for local news. And so that's kind of when I started watching, because when you're working overnights in a small market city called like Lansing, Michigan, there's really not a whole lot to do at 2 o'clock in the morning when you're awake. Sure. So you're just kind of on the computer doing whatever. So that's kind of how I kind of got into the whole Twitch. Again, Siglemic, Cosmorite, who I believe is Narcissorite. I don't know. I don't know much about what's gone since then. And I also used to watch a lot of things called Late Night with Cry and Russ. But then they had some controversy, and that's no longer a thing anymore.
Oh, okay.
So that kind of goes. That is the small history of how I got into Twitch and everything.
So when was the name change? When did you go from that name that I can't pronounce to Wallkicks?
I think it was someone in chat, someone in random Twitch chat. I don't know who was like, "Yo, you need to like I can't pronounce your name," and I'm like, "Okay, it's time to change." And then I'm like, "Boy, what is a good name?" I'm like, "I'm not good with coming up with names." So I think I was playing Super Mario 64 at the time, and there is a star in the third world called Wallkicks Will Work. And so if you see me in chat and someone is like, oh, do you work? That's exactly where it comes from. And so I just picked wall cakes and I was surprised that it was available. Like I suspected, I kind of thought something like that would be taken, but sure. It wasn't. And you know, they gave it to me. Someone like early on in my days known as wall cakes was like, wow, you must be like a really old Twitch user. I'm like, nah, I created this account like a month ago.
<That's funny.
laughs> He's like, and they were stunned that name was available.
Yeah, that is surprising. When did you? What about with Zelda? Where were you with Zelda? Because you said you were watching some Wind Waker, OOT. Yeah, were you playing Zelda back in the day?
Not particularly, honestly. I think I was really into the whole speedrunning thing. I really enjoyed watching speedruns, particularly like the Super Mario 64 speedrun. I think to me is like the greatest kind of speedrun that you can do because it's so skill based. That doesn't mean to say that none of these speedruns are skill based and whatsoever, but like it's so skill based without any major glitches that you see. You know, Super Mario 64, you're watching these runners and you're like, man, these are things that I could do if I just put in like the hours and hours of practice time. Whereas something like if you look at the Ocarina of Time speedrun now, if you're just doing straight start the game to getting to the final or to the end credits, you're looking at 3 minutes of what am I looking at, essentially.
Yep.
So I started watching those speedruns, and Wind Waker at the time was also very similar to that, minus the super swims, which is probably how I eventually got into Link to the Past, because Link to the Past, No Major Glitches is very, you know, you're still playing the entire game, essentially, you know, with some minor, you know, you can hover, you can bomb jumps, little things like that don't break the game, but that are just used for time saves. Those are probably the Zelda games that I watched as a speedrun. I still enjoy pretty much all Zelda speedruns. Twilight Princess, I briefly considered speedrunning. Did not because
it's super long, man.
It's super long, and I kind of like the idea of being able to go back to Zelda games and just kind of play them. You know, just kind of recreate the memory of like my first time playing. Right. Like I'm sure it's the kind of the same for you. If you were to try to play A Link to the Past, just play the game. No, not rando, nothing. You would fly through the game in, you know, an hour and 35 or whatever, because
right.
You speed run it now. So like that's me with Link to the Past. And I didn't want to do that with the other Zelda games.
Yeah, that makes sense. You want to enjoy them and take your time, enjoy, because so much of Zelda is exploration and figuring out puzzles and.
Precisely.
When you first, you know, you do it and then you take some time away and you come back to it, it's like, oh, I kind of remember this puzzle, and you got to kind of like refigure it out. And that's kind of the joy of it.
And then like, I mean, they're the same game, but I still find replay value in it anyways. Mm-hmm. I love the series. I love the stories that it creates. I love the characters that come out of it, you know, so I can replay pretty much any Zelda game multiple times over and still get the same enjoyment that I did from the first time playing it.
But you weren't playing them as a kid, or were you playing them as a kid?
I was definitely playing them as a kid. Like I had the Super Nintendo, I had the regular Nintendo N64. Like I had all those growing up. Funny enough, when the Wii came out, the Nintendo Wii came out, I was a teen at the time. I had saved up my money to get it, and I was going to the midnight release, and I was like, cool, I'm getting the Nintendo Wii. Me and my best friend, we stayed out, because back then you actually, you know, not necessarily camped out, but you were out in front of the door for 7-8 hours. And so we get there, they open the door, I get the Wii, and I notice right next to it there's a Zelda game. I'm like, wait a minute, because was it Twilight Princess? Twilight Princess was a launch title for the Wii, and I didn't know that. So I had the Wii, I didn't have Twilight Princess. So I had to wait like another month to pick up Twilight Princess, and it was agonizing, because it's like, I know the game exists and I want it, but I can't pick it up yet because I wanted it for the Wii at the time, not for GameCube, because the Wii's the new system.
Right.
And I needed to find it, and it was sold out everywhere. So finally was able to find a copy about a month later. And I played that thing for probably 12 hours immediately after putting it in.
Of course. Yeah.
you don't stop.
No, not at all. It's so addicting. So that was happening too with like Ocarina of Time. Like you were a bit younger then. If you were a teen when Wind Waker or Twilight Princess came out.
I have an older brother, so he would usually get first crack at those games because that, you know, a couple years older than I was, so he was a little bit better at games than I was. So he would play first, I would play second. We didn't have a whole lot of money as a family growing up, but you know, nothing. Love my family, love everything about my childhood, But sure. Yeah, so that's kind of how it was growing up. And then Skyward Sword, I definitely bought Skyward Sword day one, but I don't recall playing it all that much. Breath of the Wild, I actually held off on Breath of the Wild for a while.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure.
What was the hesitation? You don't know?
What was the hesitation? That came out in 2017. That was probably just more work related. I just had too much. I just had too much going on at the time.
Mm-hmm. That was another one that came out on the Wii U and the Switch at the same time as well. Yeah,
similar to Twilight Princess. Like, it was meant to be a previous gen console that the game got pushed back to the point where it was also a day one release for the new console.
Right.
And I didn't get a Switch day one, so I was holding off on it.
Yeah, I ended up buying it for both the Wii U and the Switch.
I actually did too.
I'm a nut. So where did you find speedrunning then? Like, you're playing the game casually, you're playing, was it just Nintendo, or did you branch out into other stuff? And then did that get you into speedrunning?
Strictly Nintendo. That's not to say, mm-hmm. I owned a PS2. I owned an Xbox 360. Those are the most recent gaming systems of the other systems that I own. I still actually own the PS2. The 360 has long since died. But yeah, it would have to have been GDQ that I probably just stumbled upon one day on Twitch and saw Siglemic, saw Cosmo Wright play. And then from there, I was like, oh my God, these guys are amazing. And I was like, okay, let's begin emulating that when I have the ability to, because like I said, I had a MacBook and a $200 Chromebook. I didn't really have the capability I didn't really have the hardware to play speedrun on a regular basis. So that's kind of when that happened.
When you were watching it, did you then try to start learning and trying to do speedruns or learning tricks for the games that you were watching? Or was it strictly, I'm going to watch and maybe later I'll get into it?
It was definitely a watch and maybe later get into it, especially when I started watching Link to the Past. And then I don't know how I transitioned from Link to the Past to Link to the Past Rando. I'm sure it was just a matter of me running into a random Twitch channel that was playing Rando. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool. Cause like now I can play, you know, I can play a different Zelda game essentially every time.
Right.
And then when I started watching it, I'm like, okay, you know, these are things that I can do. You know, I've got the skill now to, you know, I know how to dash. I've played Zelda games before. I know how they work. I know Link to the Past very well. It wasn't my favorite Zelda game at the time. Link's Awakening was and still is. But they play very similarly. Like they came out, you know, at relatively the same time. So they're essentially, you know, they don't require too much different skill wise.
Right.
But yeah, a lot of what I picked up on and a lot of the skill that I developed was honestly just by watching. When I watch runners, I look at their movement. I look at how they approach a room. I look at how they move in said room. And I think to myself, is that the fastest way to do it? And if it is, great. I now have a base of this is what you do. And now it's just a matter of fine tuning it to myself.
Right. Let me ask you this. What is it about Link's Awakening that you love so much? Because I played it recently and I love the remake. But the hardware, like it, you know, the fact that it was on the Game Boy, and it's impressive what it was doing on the Game Boy, but the controls are so frustrating because you only have the two buttons, right? Like, you're constantly switching and menuing between sword and bombs and arrows. You know what I mean? Like, I just found it to be like, frustrating.
I think a lot of it for me at this point is nostalgia. If I were a kid now, you know, playing Breath of the Wild, and then I try to pop in like the OG Link's Awakening with, like you said, just the two buttons that you have to constantly go back and forth, I would probably detest it. But that's kind of, you know, that's what I grew up playing. You know, you had to evolve and adapt. You know, Super Nintendo, you know, the controller has A, B, X, Y, L, and R. It doesn't have a whole lot to it. So, you know, you learn to play with those buttons and you go from there. You mentioned really liking the remake. I'm actually not a big fan of the remake.
Oh, really?
I thought the art style that they brought to it, like, it looks cute and all, but it's almost too cartoonish for me.
Too cartoony, yeah.
Yeah, and Link has just the deadest eyes in existence. Those are black holes in his eyes.
You're just he's asleep, right? So maybe that's what it is.
You know what? I did not think of that. Maybe he's just sleeping.
That's what it is. I like the art style. I do think it's cute. Do you not like the Wind Waker art style as well? Or are you one of those who are like, ugh?
I have grown to appreciate the Wind Waker art style, which is funny because it's not all that dissimilar from Link's Awakening. But I think it holds up incredibly well, which, yeah. I mean, at the time I can understand why people didn't like it because it's, you know, this weird cartoony, you know, it's the cell shading.
Yeah.
And, you know, games during that generation are becoming more and more realistic. Like you're pushing the boundaries of graphics. And then you see this and it's like, oh, this is not pushing the boundaries of the graphics. But then you look at, you know, Twilight Princess hasn't aged graphic wise nearly as well as Wind Waker. I don't think it's not to say Twilight Princess is bad graphic wise, but you put those two side by side. It's ugly. Like the characters in that game are ugly. You're right. Entirely.
and whereas the cel shaded ones are way cuter still because it's the simplicity to it. And the HD one is really, really sweet. So I have both HD remakes of Wind Waker and Twilight Princess. And yeah, I'm a big fan of the art style of Wind Waker. Maybe I like to go against the flow. You know what I mean? Like I'm embracing the cartooniness.
And you hope they come for the Switch. You think they'll ever come to the Switch?
I hope so. HD I would releases. Love if they brought them to the Switch. It's surprising to me that they haven't just ported everything over to the Switch because you know they love to resell us everything.
Here's a $60 game that we released 20 years ago.
Totally. Totally. And I would purchase it first day because I'm such a sucker. Like I've purchased Link to the Past how many times? Like I bought it on the SNES, I bought it on the Game Boy Advance, I bought it on like the Wii store, I bought it on the Wii U store. You know what I mean? Like I bought it so many dang times because they're just so good. Yeah, so Link's Awakening is definitely a fun game, and Wind Waker you talked about too, really enjoying like the speed runs. That's a speed run that sort of evolved a lot in the last
because
couple
they
of years.
You know they for the longest time they were looking at that big old barrier. Like this is the non HD version. I don't actually know the HD speed run very well, except that their version of Super Speed uses the grappling hook, and that is insane. Like that's such a weird. But such a big oversight from the development of the game. It's like you pull out the grappling hook, you go to like first person, and somehow those two things essentially like make you go like so fast that you just blow through one end of the screen to the other in a matter of seconds. It's just like, oh, okay. But the non-HD version, for the longest time, you know, they still had to essentially play through the whole game because they had trouble getting through the barrier to Ganon's castle. Like it was just this, you know, just for whatever reason, once you have access to Tower of the Gods and you have access to Hyrule Castle, you know, you can see Ganon's castle in the distance and you can walk to the bridge, but there's this barrier that just blocks you because, you know, like you got to get whatever you need. You got to get the Master Sword. And for years, it was thought to be impenetrable because it extended infinitely above, it extended infinitely below. You couldn't just go around it. You had to go through it. And I think finally in 2016 or 2017, maybe, I don't exactly remember what it was, but someone finally figured out a way through the barrier, and that cut the speed run from like 4 hours almost like under 2 hours just by that one trick. And I mean that's insane.
It was cool and
watching it like happen real time is insane.
I remember because I read Kotaku occasionally and I remember like it even made Kotaku news, like
that's insane.
Huge barrier skip is found in, you know, like a well-loved game. So when did you first start playing Link to the Past? Like, so you somehow in like 2017, you started watching it. Did you pick it up immediately?
So I didn't with my MacBook not being in the best shape and my $200 Chromebook that I bought for $10 not being capable of running such things. I kind of had to not be able to play for a while. Finally in kind of late 2017, I had gotten myself enough money to where I built a desktop, and immediately when I did, my first tweet was like, time to learn how to play Link to the Past random, essentially. So late 2017, early 2018 is probably when I started.
Okay.
By then I was watching, my initial group of friends that I got into was Walter. Who is still active today, not nearly as much so, but you know, he's kind of picking up the game again. after being on a little bit of a hiatus. Walter introduced me to some of his friends in what's known as the Crystal community. Where you have Jex Reffy, TJ Maelstrom, Phantom Ryu. Those are kind of the big names. You had Zephyr Blaze and Jixen. And so I kind of started playing with them. We would do weekly races on Friday where we were just in a voice call. And I was kind of shooting the shit and, you know, just basically just having fun. A lot of Spaceballs references. Fantastic movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Was the
Spaceballs Rando team built out of the Crystal Company?
It was, yes. Killer App,
okay, that makes more
TJ
sense.
TJ and Phantom Ryu. I think it was Killer App, Phantom Ryu. Yeah. I think it might have been TJ or someone. But yeah, the Spaceballs, the Rando team is all Crystal Company runners, and it is because during the races they do a lot of Spaceballs references.
We ain't found shit.
We ain't found shit.
It's one of my favorite lines from that movie.
Such a good movie.
It really is.
That's definitely who I started with. And then I became friends with Koi. And so Walter, Koi, and I would start doing races on a regular basis. And that's kind of how we started improving to the point to where we felt like we could all be pretty competitive.
So were these races less, obviously less competitive because you're doing it in voice call and that's not allowed. Mm-hmm. But when did you make the step towards doing actual competitive races?
I was not a part of the Spring 500 and whatever number.
512.
Thank you. I was not a part of that. My first tournament excursion would have been the fall 2018 tournament. I should have pulled up the challenge for that before starting this. I did not make the main bracket. I specifically remember I was in place to make the main bracket. I don't recall if they did. They definitely didn't do top 128 at the time. At that point, it might have been 64 or 96 because it definitely wasn't 128. I was in position to make the bracket going into my last qualifier race, but that race I hard last located and didn't even consider the possibility that Fire Rod could be in Turtle Rock.
And so I learned
the hard way. Yep. Fire Rod in Turtle Rock. And so I got like a 210 that race and, you know, was finished close to the bottom and dropped out of the main bracket. And I was pissed. That was back when I didn't have like the sort of zen that I do now when it comes to rando. Like I was furious about that. But
you're still like pretty new, right? Like you'd been playing for less than a year, but your expectations
I've been playing for less than a year. Yeah.
Your expectations were high, I guess.
I couldn't tell you why, but yeah, I guess my expectations were high. Maybe because I was in position. It's being in that position and then falling out of that position. The disappointment that brought. You know, kind of set me off a little bit, but joined the Challenge Cup that year, made it to top 16 in the Challenge Cup before actually losing to Walter.
Nice.
He 2-0'd me, but there were some names in that Challenge Cup. I'm hoping Challenge will load for me right now, but like, if you go back to that Challenge Cup, let's see, Frostbite finished third. Let's see who else is in this thing. I know Dragonstrike, Daze Cloud, like I said, Walther. Let's see, I see Top Life, I see Etium, I see Ravis, I see Sir Linkalot, Alizun.
So all runners that are like main tournament top tier.
Lin and Relkin were in the Challenge Cup. Like it was a loaded Challenge Cup, like to see how runners, you know, 4 years ago now are leading the way and winning tournaments now.
Totally. Yeah. I'm surprised I wasn't in that Challenge Cup. I actually qualified for that tournament somehow.
Nice, dude.
I got smoked big time, but it was pretty cool to have that feeling of making that tournament. But that challenge, the names in the Challenge Cup is insane. That's like top tier runners.
Yeah. I hope to see that kind of build on like, you know, this past Challenge Cup. I hope to see a number of those runners in a couple years get to where we are now.
Mm-hmm. Because totally. Competition you see here people is amazing. Like, last year, you had people like Zero Rush in the Challenge Cup. Now in the main tournament.
I love
good job,
Zero Rush. Why were you in the Challenge Cup, buddy?
All right. So tell me more about your like competitive journey then. So you missed the tournament. Yeah. Does that like light the fire under you? You talked about not being Zen. Where did the Zen come? Did it come along this journey?
The Zen kind of came from winning. I hate to admit that, but the Zen came from winning.
Sure.
So after, like I said, after the fall 2018 tournament, did top 16, got 2-0'd by Walther. Fair enough. You know, Walther was better at me at the time. After the tournament, Walther introduced me to Entrance Shuffle, Yes, this is where I begin my foray into cross keys. Mm-hmm. The first entrance seed that I ever played was with Walther, because I didn't have an entrance track or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point to where we're like, oh, cool, we're in go mode. So Walther, who's well ahead of me at that point, gets his seventh crystal, drops into Ganon, and Ganon's like, what the hell are you doing here? And Walther's like, oh no, we made it, defeat Ganon. And we're like, okay, that's not no big deal. We got the GT Bakey. So he climbs GT, drops into Ganon again, and Ganon goes, what the hell are you doing here? And then Walther's like, oh my god, I made it all dungeons.
This is your first entrance race?
Oh, jeez. And at that point, like, I pod was a pendant. We hadn't even considered, like, we stopped communicating where the pod keys were, and I needed a pod key in order to beat pendant pod at that point. And I'm like, dude, do you know where a pod key is? And he's like, nope. I'm like, okay, well, this is a good first seed. So that was my
first.
You
never forget your first. Yeah, yep. Especially when it's like that.
There's also a pretty good clip that's actually still in my Twitch channel where Walther is asking me where I am, and I'm in Spy Cave. And at the time, I was doing push to talk, but my push to talk is on my controller. So I would hit R in order to activate my push to talk and talk to Walther. Well, pushing R in entrance shuffle goes to your next item. Mm-hmm. When you're in Spike Cave on two hearts and you're with the cape active and you push R, you go away from the cape. So I'm like, I'm in Spike Cave. Like, I hit R as to say I'm in Spike Cave, and then I'm like, oh my god, no. And I ended up dying in Spike Cave because of
that. That's hilarious.
so that's how I kind of got started into entrance. I competed in the first Cross Keys tournament. Did qualifiers, wasn't very good, really wasn't expecting much, because like at that point I had only been playing entrance for maybe 2 months. My first round opponent was Jem.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
That's 60... funny on multiple levels, because one, it's against Jem, who no longer plays anything but casual boots.
And obviously,
they're a really good player, so.
Yeah. Jem, by the way, was the 69th ranked player in that tournament from qualifiers. He had I believe that was by design.
Okay.
I believe that he might have intentionally
dropped to 69.
To 69. I nice. Was technically the higher seed in that race.
That's hilarious.
I was 61st. Jem beat me, obviously, because he's Jem. Mm-hmm. And then I dropped down to losers and I raced Walther, and I actually beat Walther. So I eliminated Walther, because back then the Cross Keys tournament was double elimination. What you see now.
Right.
And then I played Plasma Kappa, lost to Plasma Kappa, went 1-2. Not a problem. Happy with my performance. Mm-hmm. I think I transitioned that into the 2019 main tournament. I think that's right. Yeah, 2019 main tournament. Got to the group stage. That was when they did the, I guess, GSL style groups, where like you're in groups of four, 1v4, yep. 2v3. And then the winners face each other, the losers face, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I was the 2 seed in that with my other opponents. Jet was the 1 seed. Rywick was the 3 seed. Durand was the 4 seed. And I was feeling pretty confident. I was feeling pretty cocky at that time. I thought I might have been the greatest random player. Not the greatest random player of all time. I thought I was really good. And I was like, okay, I can get out of this. I got 2-0'd by Rywick. I was pissed off. I was just not having it. I lost game one to Durand in the loser side. So I'm already down 1-0, and I quit right there. I didn't even race game two.
Oh, you didn't finish. Wow.
I did not finish that one. I was so pissed off. And that was
you
probably,
have regrets about that?
Oh yeah. Like I obviously should have been, you know, more calm and composed, but there was, I forget if it was a race against Rybak or game one against Durand. I got middle hold against Moldorm and actually threw my controller. And see on the restream, I don't move for 30 seconds.
Oh, man.
Before finally picking up my controller and going again. I was not in a good mindset during that time. And part of that was the personal life going into, you know, going back. But that tournament really kind of did not go as I mean, obviously, you know, you get eliminated, that's fine. But like how I performed professionally, I felt was not a wasn't who I was as a person.
And sure. Yeah.
I for sure feel bad about how that turned out. And I apologize to Rywick. I apologize to Durand afterwards. I remember for, you know, my actions. I mean, they didn't know that they're doing the race, but.
Right. Right. Right.
So that's kind of how that went out.
So where do you go from there? Cause it's still, you still haven't hit that Zed moment. When does the winning start happening? Because everyone knows, I mean, in 2022, everyone knows Wall Kicks is one of the best in the game. Like you do not want to play against Wall Kicks in cross keys. I know you lost in the tournament or lost in one of these rounds. And so you were kind of down on yourself, but that doesn't take away from the fact that you are so damn good at cross keys.
I've learned a lot. I think after that main tournament, after 2019, after the main tournament there, I started to put more of a focus on entrance shuffle because I was enjoying it more. So I went into the second cross keys tournament. And again, similar to the first one where you did qualifiers, you were then ranked based on your qualifiers and it was double elimination. That was the cross keys tournament where of the top 16 seeds, all but Lynn, who was ranked third, were in losers by round two.
Oh, geez.
Like that was a bloodbath for the top half. And myself included, I was the four seed. I ended up going 1-2. And again, pissed off, not happy.
Yeah.
But after that, I quit my job, not because of Rando, not at all because of Rando.
You went 1-2, you quit your job and you left.
Dang it, I lost to Rando. I'm quitting my job. No, different circumstances entirely. Sure. I quit my job. So at the time, I was able to play and focus a lot more on Rando. And that's really when I started to develop I started to get better and the results actually started coming. Walther invited me to the POG Championship, the mystery tournament. And I did really well for my first one for the POG Champion 2. I got to like the semifinals, which was way better than I would have expected. And then League showed up. I wasn't a part of the first season of League. I was a part of the second season of League. And we made playoffs. We won a round. And before we were eliminated by Team Ack, couldn't tell you what their name was. Farimi will give an interview with you in.
You're right.
We ended up getting 3-0'd by then. But at that point, I'm starting to get confident that, okay, I have the skill to actually win on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of parlayed into a couple of seasons of PogChamp. And by the time PogChamp 5 rolled around, that was also the same time season 3 of the League rolled around. And in the weirdest dichotomy or the weirdest thing that could possibly happen, my teammate Sir Link and I in the mystery tournament went undefeated. We met in winners finals. Neither of us had lost. Mm-hmm. Yep. And in League season 3, with me and Sir Link again, and Nissan and Nilsson Alex, or Nissan as I like to call him, we lost every single game. And I know
it's still unbelievable. I still can't fathom that.
We went 0-14 in League, while Sir Link and I never lost in mystery. I ended up winning
makes
that tournament.
No sense.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you why that was going on, but it was. It was hilarious. Sir Link actually knocked me into losers in winners final, and then I beat Andy in losers finals, and then I 2-0'd Sir Link in grand finals to actually win PogChamp that year. So that was my first tournament win. And at that point, I have to admit to myself, dang it, I might be pretty good at this game.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I never like to admit that I'm like an elite player, because then that just puts puts expectations on yourself, and one that
it kind of makes you sound like a prick too, right? Like makes you sound cocky, and that's not something that you are. Like,
no,
you don't want even when you're good, you don't want to be, unless you're just Michael Jordan or something. You don't want to be like, oh, I'm so good at this.
Oh, my God, Michael Jordan. Yeah. Love. Could go into sports. We could talk forever.
Yeah. Oh, we can get there for sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
So you win PogChamp. Tell me about your first League team. Who it was? Sir Link, Nilsson Alex, and you?
And myself. Yep.
And so that was season 2. What was your name?
We were Op Get Good. Operation Get Good. We really didn't have, like, it wasn't like we were really, I don't think we'd even really talked before teaming up. Walther had kind of pointed me in the direction of League again. But Walther already had Kern and Magnificent. So I needed a team. I looked into the tab of, you know, looking for a team. I saw Sir Link. Sir Link might have reached out to me. I don't precisely remember, but it was definitely me and Sterling first, and then we needed a third person. And I think Walter recommended Nils and Alex, and you know, not a problem. Here's three people who are interested in playing Rando. The team name is something that we just kind of thought up last minute. Same with the logo, and it kind of worked out. And I don't think a lot of people expected too much of us from the first season. We play our first season, season two. We played it very well. I think season two. You know, me and Sterling, I think we're the two better runners. Nothing against Nils and Alex, who's still a great runner in his own right. But he was, I don't think he was as good as the two of us. And so when we were doing the matchups, when we were playing whoever we were each week, we would kind of give, we would try to put it to where Alex would play maybe the weaker of the two if he was racing. And then Sterling or myself would take the stronger of the two. And that worked really well. We were second in the division behind Axe Team, because Axe Team went undefeated that season in the division. We were second going into the final week where we were racing Walter's team, Old Swagga Jackson. And that was co-op all dungeon, I think, in season two by then. It was a co-op week, I remember for sure. And they 2-0'd us, so they ended up jumping over us, but we knew we were going to race each other in the playoffs anyway, so it really didn't matter. I was the power player at the time, so game one was Sterling and Mark. Sterling won, so 1-0 on our end. Game two was Walter and Nils and Alex. Walter won, so 1-1. And then I played Kern in the power. Kern, being the higher seed, had the ability to pick the mode. He picked what I think everyone eventually went to, which was all dungeons, key sanity, swordless. And I beat him. And so we were up 2-1 going into game four. And being up 2-1, I'm like, let me take game four so we can just knock out. Let's just knock him out. Let's go for the kill right now. Let's not even risk a game five. I ended up racing Walther. I actually, for whatever reason, at the time, don't know why, I enjoyed swordless.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't know why. Explain that. maybe it was the high of beating Kern, but I'm like, I'm not bad at swordless. So I went back to the swordless well, except instead of doing all dungeons, I did swordless fast cannon. Because I wanted to switch it up a little bit from the all dungeons, you know, everyone's picking all dungeons, key sanity or whatever it was. And I won. So we knocked out Old Swagga Jackson in round one, and then we got 3-0'd by, Axe Team, Team Four.
At Cork and Jim. Yeah.
Yeah. The game, technically being the power player, we were considered game three, but it was the second game between our teams, between myself and Ack. Again, swordless, all dungeons, key sanity, was actually a very, very close race. We were in GT at the same time looking for the pod big. I was actually out of GT first because the pod big wasn't in there. But I had more overworld to check. Ack had done some more of the overworld stuff. And so he was able to track down the pod big first and won by a minute or so. So that was op get good for season two. Like I said, season three rolled around. We changed our name from Op Get Good to Op Got Good.
Because, oh boy. Yep.
Because we're like, man, we did well. We're good. Mm-hmm. And then I fully believe that just set a bad, you know, we gave ourselves a bad omen. And
yep.
0-14.
0-14. I still can't believe it. Like, it makes no sense to me.
I think... The one race I remember in that one was I was racing Freddy. I forgot what week it was. And I was in GT first, but I did my usual hope right, you know, hope room to compass room with a small key before going left. He did DM strats. He got the big key in Stalfos room and won by 30 seconds.
Oh, wow. That's rough. But you're... Has the Zenness now kicked in, even though you guys went 0-14 because you were able to realize. Yeah.
And winning PogChamp for sure helped out. And then moving into 2021, again, not having a job for almost a year at this point, I'd been playing a lot of Rando. I did the Retrance Invitational on the ladder. I won that. And then at the same time, I was in the Cross Keys tournament, made grand finals, lost to Goomba. So that year went really well for me. And at that point, it's like, okay, I've accomplished something. I have done what I set out to do. I won a championship, or I won a tournament. I have proven to myself, and I have proven to anyone who might want to be proven, or I have shown that I am capable of being a top performer. Mm-hmm. And so that is where the zen of, okay, I can now focus on just playing a seed. I don't have to worry about my opponent because I know I'm good enough with my routing skills, with my decision making, and with my execution that I'll win more often than I'll lose.
Yeah. So you started with speedrunning, right? Like interest in speedrunning, and then you got into rando, but it hasn't really translated over to speedrunning ALTTPR or the vanilla game of Link to the Past. Why is that?
I find NMG very boring, like to try to run. I don't know why it is. Maybe that is where most of my frustration lies, is because, you know, I don't do a lot of practice room to room. Like I said, I watch people and then I try to emulate. I try to emulate them. But when it comes to actually practicing, I don't really like putting in a whole lot of practice. That's boring. This is where I will sound a little cocky and arrogant, but I've won at this point. Why do I need to continue to practice? Of course, I need to continue practicing to get well. I lost in round one of cross keys this year. The competition is just insane. But like, running NMG is, for whatever reason, it's a totally different mindset because, you know, I'm not racing someone else. I'm racing myself.
Yep.
And, you know, I only have myself to blame if something goes wrong. If I try not to do this, but if I lose, it's like, oh my God, I lost because my opponent, you know, did something crazy or did something dumb. No, they ran the seed better than I did. But like, you know, if I mess up a room in Eastern Palace, or if I fall to Moldorm, or if I can't get a fake flipper on my way to Tower of Hera, you know, that is only, that's on me. And that's what will get me frustrated, because I still do get frustrated. Like, I talk about having the Zen, like I still do get frustrated, but I don't get frustrated because I lose a race. I get frustrated at my execution. Like, if I'm playing bad, then I might show it, but you know, I can't control what my opponent does. That's why whenever I'm in a race, I never have the race room open until Ganon's dead. So if I open the race room and I saw that my opponent finished 20 minutes ago, whoops, sorry if I was on restream for everyone who had to sit around for another 20 minutes watching me finish. So that's kind of how I view NMG, is that because I'm racing myself, I'm putting a focus on my own execution and my own room to room ability, it gets a lot more frustrating, and it's a much harder speed run than people think.
Oh yeah, it is, like, not easy.
No.
It's weird how different NMG and rando are despite being the same game. It really is. There's a big difference.
Yeah, because you can take so much of the movement from NMG and put it into rando, but at the same time, you know, in any given rando seed, you have to be able to adapt to the equipment that you have compared to the equipment that you might have in NMG. You know, in NMG, you get boots super early, so you memorize the boots movement. You memorize where you can dash, you know, how to dash into a locked door, whatever. You know, in rando, you might not get the boots ever, so you have to work on your individual. You have to work on your walking speed, and so that's kind of where I feel like I am really good. That's kind of why I feel like I do well in rando and not well in NMG, because I'm able to adapt much more to the equipment that I have for the room that I'm in, as opposed to NMG, where you're just memorizing your room movement and executing that, which is still very difficult. And, you know, everyone who does it, I have the utmost amount of respect for you. Eddie just got the 122, you know, like insane. Insane. Did you watch Eddie's, or did you watch his Ganon fight specifically?
No, I went back and watched some of it, but I didn't watch the whole thing.
Because he's 12 seconds ahead in the Ganon fight. And Ganon does so many warps during phase three that his, like, if it was just a regular Ganon fight with maybe one or two warps, he gets like a 122.50. And instead he gets a 122.59.9.
The 0.9, yeah.
0.9.
Yeah. It's the 122, though. I was actually watching him today. Yeah, I was watching him today, and he dropped in again, and he was ready to get another 122. Jesus. And he went for the spin after the two or three slashes and walked into Ganon somehow. and it just kind of wrecked it. So
that's unfortunate.
It's so NMG and Rando are so different, despite being the same game, because it's like you're talking about adaptation in Rando and learning and being repetitive and consistent in your repetition in Rando or in NMG. So it's like two separate but both impressive skill sets.
Yeah, and that's probably why I find NMG a little boring is the repetition of it. I'm doing the same thing over and over again. That gets boring after a while. In Rando, you're playing a different seat every time. You don't know what to expect in every seat, so it's a lot more fun. It's a lot more exciting.
So what does the future hold for Wildkicks? Because you then move into an admin role, right? Did the admin for was 80 keys, and now you're an admin for the Cross Keys tournament as well. So
yeah,
tell me how that kind of came about and what your role is for that.
Right. So being friends with Shereen Megawatt and the group of friends that you and I are involved with in one of the Discords, it actually the first one that I was technically part of that is technically a mod of was the casual co-op or the co-op tournament in the casual Rando Discord. It's probably been almost 2 years ago now, I'd say.
Yeah.
I was a mod for that. I was not an admin, but they asked if I wanted to be a mod. I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. It was the co-op tournament was super, super casual. There weren't restreams. You had all the time in the world. Like it was very, here's the tournament, go do it yourself essentially.
Yeah.
And worked out really well. And then probably back at the beginning of the year, where Shereen, Megawatt, and I are in a voice call, and Shereen had the idea, hey, I want to do an 80 keys tournament. And literally 2 days later, we had the Discord launch and had the rules document. Like,
yeah,
I do get that, running a tournament does take a lot of work and a lot of effort, but there are some times where you can just kind of say, hey, let's do it and make it work really simple.
Well, I think the idea of making it work isn't the hard part. It's making it work successfully is what's kind of hard, right? Like,
yeah,
like you mentioned with the co-op tournament that was in the casual Discord that is kind of dead now at this point.
yes, it is.
No restreams. So you don't have to find crews, everyone's kind of chill. So you don't have to worry about like any drama. It kind of goes that way. The 80 keys tournament though was restreamed. I think it was on ZSR, right?
Yeah, so we initially weren't planning on restreams. The entire Swiss rounds weren't restreamed. But Trez, who runs ZSR, had expressed interest in maybe restreaming some of the bracket matches, and so we brought in Trez because ZSR does such amazing work with their restreams. And as a whole, the people there are so nice. That's not to say speed gaming isn't, but I like ZSR's overall quality product better than I like Speed Gaming's product. So I was very happy to bring Trez in. But yeah, like you said, then we had to start bringing in, teams for restream. That's when we brought Moogle Charm in to kind of be the restream admin or restream moderator. He kind of was able to take the lead of all the restreams, making sure the crews are assigned, making sure the crews know that they're assigned, and kind of made that because I had never worked with that before. I didn't know what they did, how they operated. So that was a whole new learning experience for me. But the 80 keys tournament ran very, very smoothly, minus some behind the scenes stuff that I'm not going to get into, but stuff that I had to deal with that really I'm not going to go into it, but it got more personal than I would have liked.
That's always tough. Cause it takes the fun away, right? Like we're supposed to be all having a good time and then
you get
personalities involved and things happen and stuff gets brought up and
Right. But we handled it the best we could. In the end, again, no one knows any different as to what happened in the, what went on, when Shereen made the end of tournament announcement, when he's like, thank you Wildkicks for literally doing everything. I didn't do a whole lot in terms of stuff that you saw, but I did a whole lot in stuff that you didn't see. Basically, whenever there was a, hey, can an admin reach out to me? It was me that was doing it just to kind of take care of the back end. And then when the Cross Keys tournament rolled around, Allison had taken over the lead admin role from, I believe, Scary Olive, because Scary Olive was stepping down. And then I think a couple of the admins who were there at the time kind of weren't responding. So Allison reached out to a couple people, who reached out to myself and Dazed. And so we ended up, I said, okay, I wasn't too thrilled about the idea because I never really wanted to get into this side of the Rando community, because again, I don't like having to be the mean person, but I also feel like I've developed, kind of like you said at the beginning, you know, I've developed the
reputation.
I've developed the reputation within the community that people trust and people, you know that I, you know, that I'm generally a good guy. And so if I need to dip into that well a little bit to play the mean person, to play the mean admin, to basically say, hey, you can't do this, or hey, here's this issue that we have with you, we need to discuss this. I've developed the reputation, I've earned the respect of most of the community to where we can have a good conversation with that.
Yeah.
And so I've used that a little bit. Having said that, after this tournament, I don't, Allison, I don't know if you're listening, but I don't intend on coming back to an admin role. I kind of want to go back to just competing. Again, not because I'm not having a good time being an admin. I'm having a very good time, but I just want to go back to competing. I just want to race. That's kind of all it is. That's why I've never, ever applied to the council, and I never will.
That was going to be my question, is was there ever any thought of being a part of the council? Because again,
no.
The council could use good guys on it.
I know. And that's like, you know, that you can apply this lesson, or you can apply what I'm saying to, you know, a global scale, essentially. You know, if not to steer anywhere close to politics, but like, you know, you want politicians, or you want people who are leaders to be, you know, people who are capable of leading. But if people who are capable of leading and people who they know are capable of leading aren't choosing to go into those leadership positions, well, then who's going to take those leadership positions? Mm-hmm. They're going to be people who maybe aren't the best at leading and, or, you know, might not have the best reputation. And so, you have to fight that a little bit, or you have to kind of get, you know, discuss internally with yourself, which is what I do. You know, am I okay with not taking a leadership position, knowing that I would do a good job and knowing that people would respect me because I want what's good for my own mental health?
Yeah.
You know,
that's most important, right? Taking care of your mental health has to be most important.
Yes.
And something that I've learned along this journey, because I never took that into account when I joined the ladder, I
had to face that. I had to face my mental health through what I was doing in my personal life, which was working as a television producer. When I was working as a news producer, you know, I woke up, you know, I could go into this a little bit. I'll get into it in a little bit. I don't want to get too deep into it, but you know, when you work as a news producer, when you're working as a member of the media, you wake up, you check your Twitter, what happened overnight? You get to work, check your Twitter, what happened while I was gone? You know, what happened in the 30 minutes it took me to get from my home to my work? Okay. I worked in television local news. So you watch your local news program. Myself as the producer, I did everything you see on that news program without actually being on TV. Mm-hmm. All the stories, all the videos, all the scripts, the anchor positions, the stories, you know, the flow, all of that was my work. So I had to dive head first into basically a growing chaotic scene in, you know, the world around us. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a producer from 2013 to 2019. So I dealt
fun
with
times. Really fun times, really fun times.
And then I live in Las Vegas. I was in Las Vegas during the 1 October shooting, at the country festival. Mm-hmm. Our news program was on air from the 11 p.m. It was a Sunday night to Monday morning. We were on air from our 11 p.m. show, which is when we normally started, continuously, not a single commercial break. And from 11 p.m. Sunday until 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday. So that is 36 hours, 24, 36.
Were you there for majority of it?
I was there. I went in because my sister is the one that actually alerted me to it. Like, she called and was like, hey, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm sleeping. And then I saw on my phone what was going on. So I went into work at midnight because at that point we knew something was going on. We knew we were going to need people at the station. I was there from midnight until about 5 in the morning that night because I recognized that we had brought so many people in at midnight that we were going to need people during the day. So I talked to my boss, said, hey, let me go home. Let me get a couple hours of sleep. Let me come in at like 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, and let me handle the day shift. Because our executive producer at the time had just gotten married and literally the day before had left for her honeymoon in Japan.
Oh, wow.
So she was gone for 2 weeks. The unfortunate part of that was that she married a vice president of Caesars Entertainment. And so they had to fly back because while it wasn't at Caesars, obviously it affected the entire strip. So they needed everyone in town. So, but they still weren't coming. She wasn't coming in to do any work because she had just gotten married. She was on her honeymoon. Like that's fine. So yeah. So, I left at about 5 a.m. Like I said, got a couple hours of sleep, came back at 10 a.m. Monday, was there until about 2 a.m. Tuesday before saying, hey, I need to go home and get more sleep. And then came back at my usual time Tuesday and took over until we were off the air on 7:30 p.m. after our 7 p.m. show, regularly scheduled 7 p.m. show on Tuesday. That was the first time we took a break. And, you know, you see stuff, you hear stuff, and working news, you kind of had to just put it behind you because you see that every day. By the time 2019 rolled around, I hadn't realized how big of an impact it was having on me mentally, that I was beginning to have this sort of like mental block. I would get into work and I would literally stare at my computer screen and not do anything. I'm like, not even work on the show I was doing. And I would just break down. And then that's when I realized that like, this is actively killing me.
Yeah.
And so that's also when I decided that I was going to get out of news permanently. And that's why I left my job in 2019. And so I faced that. I went to counseling, went to therapy, got kind of, you know, kind of rebuilt my mental health. And it took time, you know, sure. It didn't just happen right away, right after I left.
Right.
You
yeah.
know, it took a solid year and a half before I started feeling again, essentially, you know, I started to like actively enjoy going out and doing things. And so that was also around the time where my skill and kind of the results started showing. And so like, I really feel like I was in a dark place, and then getting out of that dark place, you know, the counseling that I got and the overall improvement that it showed in my rando ability kind of really dug me out of the hole that I was in mentally and is able to get me into where I am now, which is a much calmer, much happier state of mind. And at the same time, I've learned not to get too high, not to get too low.
Right. And so being an admin, doing council work, doing mod work, doing all that stuff that would take away from that, I feel like is kind of been your goal in making sure that you're not going back to that place, because rando is supposed to be fun, right? Like,
it's my getaway. Like I have a bad day. Let me just pop open a rando seat and just, you know, kind of chill for a little bit. I don't want to deal with accusations of cheating or, you know, someone yelling that they were, they were treated unfairly. Like that's not what this community is about. This community is just about having fun, meeting people. Like I've met a number of people like in real life through the rando community. And I'm very thankful for that. I'm very thankful to hopefully develop lifelong friends as a result. I need to get out to see you. We got to go to a Kraken game, dude.
We have to go to a Kraken game. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I would love to see what's the Golden Knights in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine tickets would be tough to get. But I mean, I'm, you know, now that we have an NHL team in Seattle, I'm like so a little bit more plugged in than I've ever been into hockey. So
I love hockey. I have loved hockey my entire life.
Well, you didn't grow up in Vegas, right? You grew up somewhere else?
I grew up in Southern California. I actually grew up in Anaheim, but I was born before the Anaheim Ducks were a franchise. So I started watching the Los Angeles Kings and never looked back. I am still to this day, I bleed LA Kings when it comes to hockey. and again, kind of the same thing where them winning kind of like said, okay, I've seen them win. I don't need to invest so much of my emotions into that because when they won, you know, prior to winning in 2012, like them losing the playoffs would piss me the hell off.
Damn it.
You know, God, you guys suck. And then they won in 2012. They won again in 2014. And now, like, yeah, it's been almost 10 years since they won. But I'm like, you know what? I'm okay with that.
Yeah, have those memories of those victories.
I still have those memories. Mm-hmm. I was in my mid-20s at the time. Like, that was perfect time to win. And now they're finally good again. And I'm like, hell yeah, let's go. I'm ready to like get a little bit more back involved and hope that they win again, because that was really cool watching them win. I love hockey. Sorry.
No, I love it. I love it, man. I love the passion for it. Cause I'm not there quite yet for hockey, mm-hmm. but you know, I love the Mariners. I love the Seahawks, and you know, Seahawks won in 2013, and
that's right.
That feeling is like almost indescribable as mm-hmm. a fan. And then of course what happened in 2014 was devastating.
Yeah.
But you know, I still
to this day couldn't tell you why Pete Carroll said pass that.
We can't
no,
I need my mental health to remain positive.
Yes, of course,
we could probably shoot this into two episodes, but we're gonna wrap it up. I'm gonna ask you a couple questions and we'll wrap this thing up. So Beer has a question in the Discord. It's just a general question that I really like, and that's mm-hmm. Who are some of the folks you look up to in the community and why?
Because I always started playing with Walter, like he is probably one of my closest friends in the community. Mm-hmm.
Good guy, by the way. That's the definition of a good guy. Even more so than absolutely. You, Wally, I think. No offense. Walter is such a good guy.
Very reasonable. If you want a really good Walter clip, there's the clip Walter Gribble IV, because Walter is like very allergic to bees, and a bee got into his room when we were doing a Friday night race with the Crystal Company. He was also drunk. He had been drinking at the time, because you know, we were just, and so like
sure.
He kind of stops and like you see him on his little camera, like, you know, pull out. He's like, oh, there's a bee. And he's like, I have this spray. And then for like 30 seconds continually, you just hear shh, and you just like the entire time, you're just like, bee. And then I guess the bee like dives bomb him and you see him like fall over. it's such a good clip. And no, Walter is a tremendous, tremendous individual. It's definitely someone I look up to. Other people that I like really enjoy and like kind of look up to in the community. You got to give love to Ari, you know, just,
oh yeah.
Being able to not only blend the rando, but the NMG, like he mm-hmm. is one of the few top NMG runners who also plays rando. I
know we kind of shit on the word nice, but Ari is like a genuinely nice person, like a genuinely nice person. Yeah.
Just overall, just such a wonderful person.
Yeah.
You know, I got to give shout out to Andy. I met Andy when he was in Vegas for an event. He doesn't remember because he was drinking, but that definitely happened. He can't deny it. Those are probably the biggest people that like I would say that I kind of look up to. It's hard to say, like I see looking up to it as sort of like, man, I wish to one day be that kind of person, but like, I'm mm-hmm. happy with who I am. And I'm also very mm-hmm. damn good at the game. Sorry, I'm patting myself on the back real quick. I don't really need to look up to anyone skill wise in the community. I don't think.
Yeah. I echo that. You are really damn good at this game. all right. So we're going to finish it with the tilt question. How do you handle tilt? We talked about Zen. We talked about, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of found it through winning. And I've watched your streams. You do still get upset.
I still do.
I think the difference between like tilt and upset is pretty big, right? Like being mm-hmm. upset is okay, but does it like fuck you up, right? Like does it make you where you want to quit the game or it gets you depressed or whatever? So how do you handle that? And how do you separate the two? How do you handle your tilt?
The biggest thing that helped me there is the ladder. When you're just racing people, you don't know who you're racing. You're generally racing someone usually around your skill level, but like I set it up to where I don't get alerts if my opponent finishes. So it taught me to not focus so much on my opponent, just focus on my own routing, my own execution, which I talked about previously. And that's helped me kind of shift away from getting angry at my opponent for beating me to, okay, I lost because, you know, maybe my execution wasn't that good, which I think that's the difference between getting tilt. Cause I think when you're tilted, you look for excuses that aren't like you, Tilt is you're looking for someone else or something else to blame other than yourself.
Yeah.
Being upset at yourself is fine. And right. like you said, I still get upset at myself when I feel like my execution isn't up to par or, you know, I am last locating, which that isn't necessarily as much in my control as my execution, but mm-hmm. it's still my decision-making isn't up to par, isn't up to mm-hmm. my standards. So
right.
if you're able to separate being upset at your opponent for beating you versus maybe just, or, you know, being tilted at your, because your opponent beat you or being tilted, you know, and trying to blame other things, that's to me is being tilted versus, you know, being upset at your execution, which, you know, you have more control over. And
right.
maybe you're just, you know, maybe today just isn't your day. And it's like, okay, you know, my thumbs for whatever reason aren't warmed up, you know, and mm-hmm. my, you know, I missed the button, dang it. So mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that's kind of what I see separating tilts and being upset. And like I said, ladder, because I don't focus on my ladder, taught me not to focus on my opponent. And I've brought that into my tournament races by never opening up the race room until mm-hmm. I'm actually going to forfeit because I feel like I'm so far behind or right. I'm finished.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really good advice. I like that. I said that was the last question, but I lied. I have one more I got to ask you.
Perfect.
Because you are such a cross keys genius and excellent at one, you know, like you're not going to toot your own horn, but I'm going to toot it a little bit. You're one of the best top three, top five.
Appreciate it.
Cross keys runners in the community. There's no denying that. Mm-hmm. So when I play cross keys, I think, what would Wally do? that's kind of how my approach to
cross keys is now.
So here's the big question, the Eastern skip. Where did that mm-hmm. start? And explain it to me.
The Eastern skip. I mean, especially a Sphere Zero Eastern. If you find Eastern in Kakariko, chances are you don't have the lamp. And so you are looking at most at three in logic items that aren't the fastest to get to. And so, I mean, am I really going to burn 2.5-3 minutes going to three in logic checks and one probably out of logic check? That's way the far away. It just, I consider it slow. I don't think that there's better uses for my time than dipping a three logic check Eastern Palace. And so that kind of evolved into, you know, Zelga has his whole skip emote or whatever, skip mm-hmm. Eastern Palace emote.
Yeah.
You know, I could talk, you know, Zelga's another amazing runner, another amazing Ace Attorney.
Oh, right.
Sprite
right.
runner.
yeah.
So that's kind of how I look at Eastern Palace is, you know, it's six checks at the most. It's probably when you find a three in logic checks, maybe four if you have picked up the lamp. Mm-hmm. And it feels slow. And so when I'm running a cross key seed, you know, I focus my first hour of the seed is usually reconnaissance. It's usually going, you know, checking as many entrances as possible. Mm-hmm. And then the second hour, we usually shift into dungeon clearing. And so like that's kind of how that bore out with Eastern. You know, if I see Eastern, chances are I'm going to be able to clear it with, you know, the bow and Biki. Like, I, you know, it's one of the least required, like, you don't need a whole lot to beat the dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
And so more often than not, you're going to be able to find the bow and Biki before you really need to go into Eastern. Of course, if there is something in Eastern, I've probably lost, or at least I'm probably behind.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, last Cross Keys tournament, I was very angry at you because I skipped Eastern and CAC, which had both the sword and the boots logically, like right away. And I didn't get them for like an hour and a half. And that was the six and two or like five and two five match and two. Or whatever. So yeah. I got knocked out and I was very angry at you.
Wally. I'm sorry. It's still the risk, though. You still have to take it is still always a risk no matter what.
Sure. And I've come around to like, no, you're right. Wally's right. Like, it sucks that it didn't work that one time, but so many times I've just wasted so much time in Eastern. It's like, mm-hmm. not worth it. So
like to me, it's, if you're able to single dip, if there's anything in Eastern Palace, it's either in the big chest or it's on Armos Knights.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's obviously not the entire time, but I sure. feel like that might just be recency bias, or that might be the bias of me to never Eastern. So sure. yes, I am hard totally. On team never Eastern. I would like to believe that I might have, you know, started that trend.
I think you did. I think you did. All right, man. Thank you so much for doing the show. I can't thank you enough.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. And thanks for, you know, you're saying I'm maybe leading off season two. Oh, my God. Like,
This is the first episode, man.
I have the nerves. I'm like, I need to perform. You know? I gotta prepare. I gotta perform. Man, I hope people like this. But
it's been a great conversation.
Dude.
It's been so much fun, and I had to lead off with the heavy hitter, man. I had to, so we had to bring in Wally for it.
Thank you for all you do, dude. This is really cool, and I'm really excited to, you know, listen to everyone's stories.
Man, Wallkicks is just such a good dude, and I love that I can call him my friend. I love that I get a race with him. I love that I get to pick his brain and get better at this game together with him. If you get a chance to race or be friends with Wally, I'd highly suggest it. Dude's such an awesome dude. Big shout outs to him for kicking off this season for us. All right, so episode number two is not going to be next Monday. It's going to be this Thursday. We've got our next guest, Leoria of Light. Leoria is going to be on the show. It's an awesome conversation. I say that about all of them, but it's true. We keep talking and talking. Every episode that I've been doing, it feels like we get to the end. And it's like, oh, we should keep going. We should keep going. And that's how it was with Leo. I didn't really know Leoria and her story very well. And so learning a lot about who she is and how she got into the game and her approach and her friend group and stuff. It was really good. So I'm excited for everyone to hear that conversation. That will be out this Thursday. So come back for that. 216 Weekly again this Saturday, noon Eastern, doing Fad Keys. Make sure you join the Discord. You can do that by going to 216pod.com. There's a link to the Discord there. Subscribe where you can. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, everywhere. We're all over the place. I can't thank you all enough for listening to the show, for spreading the word. You're all super awesome. I'm having so much fun doing this show. So thanks again for listening, and we'll see you Thursday.